To the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is Tuesday, March 20th, 2007, and members present are Senators Bundy, Ellis, and Stevens. We have several items before us today. We'll deal first with Senate Bill 18, Property Foreclosures and Executions. I understand we have a couple of people to testify. Then we'll move to the first public hearing on Senate Joint Resolution Number 4 by Senator Wilikowski, Natural Gas for State Residents, followed by Senate Bill 121, a cruise ship discharge by Senator Kim Elton, and then any other business that may come before us. The SB 99 Police Standards Council is still being held for work in committee, and will be properly noticed and reminded to everyone before that bill comes back before us. So let's go ahead and turn to Senate Bill 18, Property Foreclosures and Executions. And Senator Bundy, we have two folks signed up to testify. I know Stephen Ralph has signed up. He's testified before, but we'll see if he has something more to add. But first is Mr. Brian Merrill. Mr. Merrill, are you with us?
I am. I had not intended to testify, only to listen in, though.
Okay. No problem. Mr. Ralph, did you need to add something to the record beyond what you presented before, or Senator Bundy?
If I can interrupt just for a second.
Sure.
Thank you. We have a CS to adopt, and Mr. Roush would be speaking to the changes in the CS.
Okay. Mr. Routh, could you come forward, and we'll have you talk us through what's in the proposed committee substitute before we consider adoption?
You bet. I'm telephonically appearing, Mr. Chairman, the changes that are in the committee substitute are, I believe, five areas. The first is there was an inconsistency in terminology between grantor and trustor. It's a technical change, and it's been made consistent to become trustor throughout the document. The second change is also technical. It sets up parameters of the length of time for publishing on the website, and mandates some time limits on when it has to be on the web. The third change also clarifies that to ensure wide dissemination of the information on the web, the site has to be free to the public for viewing, and that's just a clarification that's been added into the section 1B2. The fourth item is added language to clarify that the physical possession means actual physical possession. So in two places, the word actual or actually has been added to section 4, just to clarify that that was the intent. And the last, there was a typo in section 11 where it should have read and as opposed to or, and that's been corrected in the committee substitute. And I believe those are the only changes that have been suggested.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ralph. I'd note for the record that Senator Davis has joined the committee. Comments or questions about the proposed committee substitute? We're dealing with the Bannister. Oh, it's 153/L, Bannister version. And Mr. Ralph has just gone through an explanation of the of the committee substitute, and committee staff has reviewed the substitute as well. Is there any discussion of the committee substitute? The chair will entertain a motion to adopt the Bannister /L version as the working document before us.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bundy makes the motion. Is there any discussion of the motion? Any objection to the motion? If not so ordered, that is the version before the committee at this time. Mr. Routh, did you have any other comments you'd care to make?
Mr. Chairman, no, but I'll certainly respond to any questions if anyone has one.
Okay. Senator Bundy, do you want to just take a moment to sum up the legislation in its current form?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, the changes were technical so that the bill hasn't substantially changed from originally introduced. It is, again, to use the word technical, adjustments to the foreclosure procedure that allows, I think, a more efficient and a more consumer-friendly, if we can look at it that way, version of foreclosure, where we don't have just one bidder who might be a person who simply wants to turn property, flip it, I guess is the terminology in the real estate business, for a profit, and would allow people to actually bid on a foreclosed home and allow them to then use that as a residence and assume the American dream.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. I personally support your goal in that. Will we be able to get all those infomercials off the late night TV that are selling wealth creating systems built around flipping properties and no money down?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I know the Alaska State Senate has awesome power, but there are even limitations to that awesome power.
Yes, I won't put you in charge of late night TV. That would be a tall order. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, sir. I just wanted to get an explanation of that's sort of a the definition. The phrase is actually in physical possession. I guess I just need to understand what that really means. It's not physical possession. It's actually in physical possession. Why the so specific? What does that mean?
Senator Bundy.
Could I refer to Mr. Rauch?
Sure. Mr. Rauch, are you there?
I am. Senator Stevens, I believe that the intent was to deal with a lawsuit or a Supreme Court case that occurred a few years ago called the Nystrom versus Buckhorn. And what it did is it set up some standards that were very hard to for the title industry to conform to. And so the intent of this is that if there is somebody in physical possession of the property, then some certain notice provisions might apply. But to be absolutely clear that it's not just physical, but it's actual. And I'm not sure how much that adds, but the idea was to take away a whole lot of interpretation that somebody actually has to be there, because you might be able to physically possess it by maybe owning it or maybe being there during the day or something, but you're not actually there occupying the property. So it was just to really make clear that it has to be a substantial possessory appearing interest in the property for the trigger to apply.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rauch. I'd like to note for the record that Senator Hoffman has joined the committee. Are there further questions or comments for the sponsor? And Senator Bundy, since we've had the bill before us and tuned it up with this committee substitute, there's no opposition to the bill has come to the committee. Are you aware of any at this point?
I'm not aware of any opposition either.
Okay. Okay, well, we've had the bill before us. We've improved it with the committee substitute, some of the technical changes. Okay, staff tells me there is a zero fiscal note on the original version, and I see nothing in the committee substitute that would trigger a new fiscal note, so I'm comfortable with the current fiscal note accompanying the bill. Is there further comment or questions about the legislation? I think we've worked it over pretty well. It's pretty straightforward legislation. What would be the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Certainly.
Thank you. I'd like to suggest that we move this Senate Bill 18, the CS for Senate Bill 18, from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Is there discussion of the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, so ordered. The bill moves on to the next committee of referral. Senator Bundy, thank you for bringing the bill before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, the next item is Senate Joint Resolution Number 4, Natural Gas for State Residents. We'd like to invite Senator Wilikowski to join us at the table. Senator Wilikowski, welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. If you'd like to go ahead with your initial presentation of the bill. The plan would be to hear your presentation, hear some comments. I believe you have about three amendments that are likely to be rolled into a committee substitute for consideration by the committee at our next meeting. So if you'd go ahead with your initial presentation and then discussion of the amendments, and we'll take it from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Wilikowski. I am a senator for Northeast Anchorage. And as you know, particularly those of you that represent South Central, the residents and businesses of South Central have seen soaring heating costs in the past 5 years. There are about 340,000 Alaskans that use cook inlet gas to heat their homes from Fairbanks through Anchorage to the Matsu to Kenai Peninsula. Since 2002, prices have increased, prices of natural gas, that is, for South Central consumers have increased 97%, with a 30% increase this year alone. The average cost of heating a home has approximately doubled from about $750 5 years ago to about $1,544 today for working Alaskans, seniors, and those on fixed incomes, as well as businesses and government. The municipality of Anchorage and others, this increases have caused severe hardship. I've received numerous calls from and emails from constituents concerned about how they're going to cover these costs. They're looking to us to do something to control these costs. And the company that delivers gas to residents of South Central, NSTAR Natural Gas Company, reports that its share of gas costs has declined. The big issue, according to NSTAR, is the cost at which they are securing gas from Cook Inlet producers. NSTAR says, quote, "We are moving from a market with excess deliverability to an environment where deliverability does not meet demand." In plain English, this means we're depleting the Cook Inlet's known gas supplies. The Department of Natural Resources estimates there is approximately 1.7 trillion feet of gas that remain in Cook Inlet out of about 8.8 trillion that have been discovered in the inlet. At the same time as South Central residents and businesses are struggling to pay these soaring heating costs, the owners of the Kenai Liquefied Natural Gas Plant are applying for a 2-year extension of their license to export natural gas to Japan. ConocoPhillips and Marathon currently export 1.3 million metric tons of LNG, or about 36% of the gas produced each year in the inlet, to Tokyo, Japan, for use by the Tokyo Electric Power Company and Tokyo Gas. We understand the importance of this plant, but we think it's only fair to ask the question about the impact on South Central consumers of shipping this gas overseas. This Senate Resolution Number 4 calls on the Attorney General, in consultation with the Department of Natural Resources, to evaluate whether the extension of the export license is in the interests of local consumers in the state, whether the non-renewal of the license will result in lower prices for local businesses and residents. Alaskans deserve answers to these questions, and we as legislators, in my opinion, need them too. SJR 4 also calls on the producers of natural gas in Cook Inlet to work with local utilities to provide more affordable gas for Alaskans. I've heard from several knowledgeable individuals who say the cost of producing gas from Cook Inlet, particularly from the so-called legacy fields, is less than about $1 per MCF, while we're paying approximately over $6 currently as NSTAR consumers. I've also heard, but cannot verify because the information is proprietary, that Tokyo utilities are paying roughly the same or less for their gas as our local consumers, despite the fact that the costs we have to factor in the cost of transporting the gas 6,600 nautical miles round trip to Japan, as well as the cost of liquefaction and regasification. In a recent proposed contract between Marathon and NSTAR, NSTAR agreed to pay Marathon at a rate tied to the Henry Hub pricing point in Louisiana. Over the past 2 years, the Henry Hub rate has averaged about $7.60. This rate spiked in 2005, as you're aware, because of Hurricane Katrina. So local consumers are paying higher costs in part because of a hurricane that occurred thousands of miles away. This is a relatively new benchmark, this Henry Hub benchmark, for price in Cook Inlet gas. Prior to 2004, the contracts relied primarily on the price of oil. Gas under these contracts cost NSTAR significantly less than the Henry Hub rate. The intent of SJR 4 is to express the will of the legislature that producers offer terms as beneficial as possible to local consumers. We recognize that natural gas sells on a world market, that Alaska is competing internationally for exploration dollars, and that high prices may serve as an incentive for more exploration in the region. This is a complex issue without easy solutions. I've met with many of the players here, and I've struggled to find an adequate remedy or solution. But I believe a first reasonable step is to evaluate whether continuing the export of Cook Inlet's gas is in the best interest of Alaskans who rely on the gas from the inlet to heat their homes and businesses and to generate electricity. The third thing that the SJR 4 does is it calls on the Regulatory Commission of Alaska to expedite review of any contract that will provide long-term affordable gas for Alaskans. I have heard from several parties, utilities, particularly end producers, that the timelines under which the commission operates need to be tightened in the interest of consumers as well as producers and utilities. And I urge you to support, join me in supporting SJR 4. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator, for being with us today and for your presentation of the bill. I personally appreciate it. I've heard from my constituents as well. There's a lot of consternation, not just consternation out there, but real squeeze on people's pocketbooks. And we appreciate you addressing the issue. Are there comments or questions for the sponsor? Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A change is always threatening for everyone, and I believe we in Cook Inlet have enjoyed below market prices for gases for our natural gas for a long time. So if we go to market, it seems it may seem onerous, though, not to people in the lower 48 who are paying substantially more than we're paying. But I'm wondering from Senator Wolakowski if when these people talk to you and they're concerned about the price of gas and perhaps prohibiting commercial sale of that gas, if they realize that, as I understand it, the commercialization of the gas allows a volume of gas to be produced that really reduces the price overall to the consumer, because we just had consumer, household consumer use of gas, we wouldn't use the volume that would help amortize the cost of exploration, where if we have places like Agrium, it will reduce the cost of amortization and basically reduce the cost of gas overall.
Senator Wolakowski.
Thank you. I really have struggled with this issue for a long time, many months, in fact. And trying to craft something so that we showed some kind of action on our part, which I think is important. I think people are looking for that from us. And I didn't come out with a resolution that said we're going to object to the FERC renewal. I didn't come out with that. I didn't come out with an application, a resolution that said we're going to cap the price. I didn't come out with something. I came out with, I thought, a very middle ground resolution, which says we think, And you may be right, Senator Bundy, maybe the consumers do benefit more by that. But all we're asking is for the Attorney General in conjunction with DNR to look into this and determine whether or not this is in Alaska's best interest, whether this is in South Central consumers' best interest to export 36% of our gas overseas when we have prices that have increased 97% in the last 5 years. That's all we're asking. And the Attorney General could come back and say exactly what you're saying, that we do find that there is significant merit to it. And we were very careful to emphasize in this that we do feel the LNG plant is an important plant. It employs residents. It brings money into our economy. All we're saying is let's weigh the balance here. Let's make sure we fully understand. Let's make a decision. We fully understand what we're doing here. What we're getting ourselves into.
Okay. Senator Bundy, follow up.
And I hope that at least from my point of view, the Attorney General then would also view this issue that the resource is really a state resource. It doesn't belong to South Central, it belongs to the state. And if indeed we sell that gas at a less than competitive rate, are the citizens of South Central being subsidized, and are we impacting the state's economy negatively because we're selling gas at a subsidy? Optimal price. And, I mean, we can choose to do that, but we ought to be aware that that's what we're doing. As some people would recognize, I want to be fair, it would be South Central's version of PCE.
If I just could.
Sure.
This Cook Inlet provides gas to a huge number of people. The number I have is 473,000 people who rely on it for natural gas or to generate electricity in their homes and businesses. So this is two-thirds of all Alaskans rely on this to a large extent. So I do think it is something that has an impact all up and down, certainly the road system.
Okay. Senator Stevens.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, part of the question was answered. I was trying to get an idea of the volumes, and you did say 36% overseas. That means that 64%, is that local and industrial agrium included in that 64%. And the other question I'd like to answer too has, I didn't quite understand, you were comparing the prices in Tokyo to the prices in Alaska, and you talked about not charging for transportation, but also there was something about gasification. Could you just go through that a little slower so I understand what is happening to that gas that that would you would normally think the cost would be higher?
Thank you. The percentages vary somewhat, but the last numbers that I've seen indicate that roughly 36% goes to Japan. It goes to Conoco and Marathon. Roughly 20% goes to Agrium, so that's 56%. Roughly 16% goes for NSTAR users. I think there's a chart that Senator Hoffman has. And then there's other percentages go to varying electrical utilities and things of that nature. So the vast, vast majority is going to essentially two users in Kenai, 36% to, 20% to Agrium, and then 36% to Conoco Marathon. I guess the other question that you had was on the cost to overseas, and I've heard from a number of different people, I mentioned this, that the cost to produce this gas is anywhere from 50 cents to a dollar. And then they're selling it for the varying rates. Agrium pays lower, but people lock in contracts, so there's reasons for that. But I have heard that the residents of Tokyo are paying less, and I think one of the reasons they pay less is because they have a longer-term contract. Their contract is up for renewal, and so that may bump the price up. But you have the cost to pull the gas out of the ground. You have the cost to liquefy it. You have the cost to regasify it. You have the cost to ship it overseas. And when you factor in all those costs, and this is my understanding from a number of, I think, very reliable sources, the residents of Japan are paying roughly the same, if not less, than what the residents are of South Central are paying for the gas.
Go ahead. Can you give me an idea of the known reserves? How many years can you expect this to continue before it goes into decline and they can't produce, they can't provide for all of these?
It's estimated that the 1.7 trillion feet of gas that we have will last approximately 8 years, and at the current use. It's also important to remember that there's varying disputes as to whether or not we have a shortage or not. We don't have enough gas in South Central to do everything we'd like. We know that for sure. Agrium cannot operate in the wintertime because there is a spike of natural gas which goes to NSTAR consumers and businesses. And so we know, we can see that we don't have enough gas. NSTAR could consume much more than the 20% or 18% that they're currently consuming. We just don't have enough gas for them to do it. So I know there are some people who say we don't have a shortage. I guess I would point to the fact that we have consumers who aren't using as much gas as they would like to, and I would also point to the fact that we've had increases of 97%. Supply and demand.
Okay. Senator Wilkowski, are you prepared at this time to just give us a general idea of some amendments that you're thinking about proposing to the committee? Like I said, during the intervening time, we'll work on a committee substitute to bring back before us at the next meeting. But did you just want to give us a flavor for what you had in mind?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have three, I think, relatively minor amendments that my staff has asked me to bring forward. And we've spoken with, some people at ConocoPhillips and also at Natural Resources. And
if you're not prepared to do that today, that's okay.
I'm prepared, in fact.
It would be okay either way.
Does everyone have copies of those?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, on page 2, line 12, we would, it says, offers many benefits to the state. And then there's a clause after that, the state's first priority. We would recommend changing that to the state must have as a priority the availability of affordable gas to meet the needs of its people.
Okay. On that point, Senator Mundy?
Well, much like beauty, affordability would be in the beholder. How do you define affordable gas? Again, we can subsidize people who use gas, give it to them free if we want, but there's a cost to the state, and I'm not sure what affordable gas means.
I suppose we could get into a long, drawn-out definition and try to define affordable. When I think of affordable, I mean gas, which Alaskans, I guess it's hard to put an exact definition of affordable. We've seen prices increase 97%. And I have people telling me that they're making choices between rent, between food, and gas. So that, to me, indicates it's not affordable, that we have increases that are spiraling out of control.
In the interest of time, could you just think about his point? And
sure.
Let's move on to the second one, because we will come back to this issue in a committee substitute
sure.
at the next meeting.
Page 2, line 15. After Attorney General, add in coordination with the Department of Natural Resources. And the purpose for that is to just bring in another group who has expertise in this area.
Okay.
The third change is page 2, line 17, and that simply replaces the word termination with non-renewal.
Okay. Any further comments or questions at this stage? We're going to move on. We have three people signed up to testify. We'll need to keep everyone to around 3 minutes because we have another piece of important legislation to consider after this one.
Chairman, just another question is when we come back on okay. the last item.
Senator Bundy.
On the termination, I could see there would be a potential financial penalty to the state if we were to terminate someone's license. But if there's I'd be interested to know if there are any possible litigation involved in non-renewal of license and if there was penalty to the state.
Okay, good question.
Thank you.
Okay, let's proceed to public testimony. We have first Barbara Williams. Ms. Williams, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Please give us your name again and your affiliation for the record, and please go ahead with about 3 minutes of testimony.
Thank you, sir. My name is Barbara Williams, and I'm with Alaska Public Interest Research Group. And we're testifying today about the high price consumers are experiencing with their gas. Just a moment ago, I believe Senator Wilikowski referenced that some people are making choices in whether they're paying rent or eating or paying gas. And we know of families that spent this entire winter without gas because they could not afford it. They were of certain poverty level. They had other factors that factored in on that. But some families weren't able to afford gas this winter because they needed to eat. Another thing that we've noticed in some of our studies is that people that are applying for energy assistance, some people aren't qualifying based on the number of people in their household. And I know that the gas has increased, so some of these low-income people that are relying on grants and things aren't getting grants that would help them pay for their gas. And then also from my own experience, I know that our gas bill doubled from last year, and that makes it hard because I know our family has disabled, we have one disabled person, and I'm the only working person in the house. And when my gas doubled, I am making choices about things that we can do and bills that we pay. And families in Alaska, when we have the gas in the ground here, shouldn't have to be making choices between food and rent, and whether they can have gas to heat their homes. We talk to a lot of people in the business that we do, and we know that consumers are really making those choices as to whether they're going to have groceries or gas to heat their homes, and we don't feel like that the current situation is adequate enough to meet the needs of the people that can't afford the gas and are facing increases because of their financial status. So we're hoping that regardless of what you all do down there, that we can have affordable gas for all Alaskans.
Great. Ms. Williams, thank you very much for your testimony today. And for you and all the other witnesses, we are open to or would be happy to accept your written testimony as well as part of the public record. Senator Bundy, for this witness.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Williams. A lot of Alaskans have difficulty having enough money to meet basic needs. Are you suggesting that gas, natural gas, be added to welfare benefits?
Yes, I think that would be a good idea, that they get added to welfare benefits, because when families are already on welfare programs or we have people with disabilities in their home, elderly seniors and things, they're not able to afford these doubling and tripling of bills. And as we've heard in this testimony previously, gas has gone up 97%, and that makes it hard for people. We've cut out their longevity bonuses. We've cut out a lot of bells and whistles on things. And I think it would be very good for welfare to include gas in on the welfare system and then make more funding available for grants and things for people that need to afford the gas, because people aren't staying warm and they're resorting to other methods to heat their homes.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Ms. Williams, thanks for your testimony today.
Thank you, and I'll get it written up and send it down to you all so you have written comments.
That'd be great. We'll get it in the committee folder.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Next is Mr. Paul Kendall. Mr. Kendall, if you could state your name and any affiliation for the record, and please go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you might want to get a little closer to the microphone.
Okay. Well, my name is Paul D. Kendall, and I have no conflict of interest or affiliations at this time. I'm an individual citizen who's had some history of political and energy activism. And I came here to practice up to be able to give a testimony. It's my first time to do this to a wall and a microphone. First of all, I wanted to thank you for bringing this bill forward. In my opinion, it could use a lot of beef and much more authoritative control. But I think the recognition that there's a problem deserves some type of accommodation or thank yous. So I guess I'll just read something briefly here, if I might. This is only one paragraph. It says the following: we need an energy bill of rights for our single-family homeowners and residential dwellings, designating our four life-sustaining essential needs, sectors, or elements. The four things we need, ladies and gentlemen, are clean air, clean water, a balanced environment, and energy. Those are four needs that we can't do without. They actually sustain our life as a species. We need a balanced environment, energy, and safety. As off-limits, we need to make those four sectors off-limits to any type of plundering, profiteering, economic assault, or other financially perturbing or destabilizing upheavals. These upheavals are jeopardizing our family's home and safety and general well-being. The sectors of commercial, industrial, institutional, and military users can all pass on their costs. Our homes cannot pass on these unrelenting price increases from fossil fuel distribution networks, which, by the way, many of them are located around the world and owned by a few outsider stockholders. That would be something I would read into the record. And going to the more common sense referencing, it seems to me, gentlemen, that if you look at this, what happens with the homeowner, the home is our foundation. It is a fundamental building block to our society. It is where we go to contemplate, to isolate, to heal, to procreate, no matter whether we like each other, whether we're rich or poor, big or small, black or white, Shia or Sunni or Democrat or Republican, whatever. That dwelling is a fundamental need that we share outside of our primal drives. So what happens here is that when we get a cost increase, it is many times over to us because it hits all of our sectors that we need to hold the home stable, but then the market out there, the grocery store, all of the outside, it's called, I think, turning the dollar. So our impact is huge, and I've heard Mr. Bundy refer to subsidizing somebody or something of that nature or welfare. And it isn't about that. I would suggest to you that what we need is a reference to true and actual impact cost accounting. Let's not forget, gentlemen, the public utilities were set up because we realized that the public had to be held in some secure position beyond normal capitalism or free enterprise. So what I'm suggesting to you is that in this bill, if I might make a suggestion, I would suggest that you add that all information has to be made to the available to the general public. When you begin to look at the fact that commercial business uses about 10 times the amount of an average home, or an industrial uses 50,000 times the use of a homeowner's use, then you've got the military and the institutions, you realize how vulnerable the little homes are. I would suggest to you that we need to know the true and actual impact cost accounting at the wellhead of where that gas comes in at. And from there, we can deduce what that product costs. Keeping in mind that what they have done is they have taken the word product, they now call it commodities. And the reason is that we learned through Enron, and by the way, through some papers I just was over at the courthouse reviewing on the BP lawsuit with John Brown, that many of these companies have a history of manipulating the price for their own welfare. Let's see. So I would suggest that in your bill that you suggest that they make sure that this information is available to us, because much of this information, if you try to find it out, what they'll tell you is it's proprietary, so you can't get an idea of what the uses and the distribution networks are. Also, NSTAR, as I understand it, has had an offer made to purchase it by a private corporation. I put an email into Ms. Giard, Katie, or something like that. And
Kate Guyard.
Yeah, I haven't heard back from her, but she seemed like a very competent person before the Senate on some meeting. But if you allow a private company to purchase NSTAR, you'd be making a terrible mistake. And the reason is I've seen private companies purchase before, and what happens is they seal their records. And your understanding of distribution networks and points and profit additions and markups, you'll never get to that unless it's some major legal undertaking. So in wrapping up here, not knowing where I'm at, I'm sure I must be near 3 minutes. I thank you for this bill. It's an awareness of realization we need to do something. The key to it is true and actual impact cost accounting and sector impacts. Let's see. We need to have this information non-proprietary because it is a public need. And I'd also like to know about the hydrogen production. I'd like to know where that's, if any, is being generated and where it's sent to. And let's see. I think that's about it, gentlemen. But if we continue to allow the single-family dwelling, let me put this in perspective. The reason they did this was this. In the old days, what happened was you'd either be on natural gas or electricity. And when the electricity company would go up in price, you just hang everything up and go natural gas. And then when the natural gas went high, you just run back to electricity. Because I remember as a kid, we used to do this. And what happened is, most people don't realize it, but these companies live off of huge, huge cash flows that we give them on a monthly basis, just huge. But what they were finding was one month they'd have huge amounts of money, and the next they wouldn't have anything. So what they're now doing is they're coordinating all pricing of all energies. And this is what's happening. I would call it a near conspiracy. They call it coordinating.
Mr. Kendall, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up, please.
Sure. I thank you, and I'm done, and thanks for the opportunity.
We appreciate your testimony and your insights. You gave us some good food for thought, so thank you very much. Senator Bundy.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I just didn't want Mr. Kendall to go away with any illusions. This is a resolution. It's not a bill. It has no force of law. As a matter of fact, it gives a sense of the sentiment of the legislature if it should it pass, but that can be pretty well ignored with impunity if people choose to.
Now, Senator Bundy, you didn't want to burst our bubble like that, did you?
No, but maybe his.
Mr. Kendall, thanks for being with us. The next presenter is Mr. Pat Luby. Pat, you're our final presenter, and then we're going to move on to another bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Pat Luby. I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP in Alaska. As we mentioned in our letter to the committee, we have no expertise in the sale of natural gas. However, if Senate Joint Resolution 4 can help bring down heating costs for older and younger Alaskans, we would welcome it. The NSTAR increase in January hit many of our members hard. NSTAR has additional increased proposals before the RCA at this time. You've heard from your constituents. You're probably going to hear more. Senator Bundy is correct that consumers in the lower 48 often do pay more. But as you also know, your constituents and our AARP members don't really care because they're unaware of what those costs are. They're worried about what they have to pay each month. Anything that can be done to reduce heating costs in Alaska will be welcome. And we actually do have what you might call a means-tested welfare program that does include utilities. It's called the LIHEAP program, the Low-Income Energy Assistance Program. And both our senators have been very good about increasing the federal emergency funding for that in the past. That's it. Thank you.
Mr. Luby, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it. I should ask, is there anyone here in Juneau or anyone else online who would like to testify at this time on SJR4? If not, Senator Wilikowski, any quick words of wrap-up?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll see you back at our next meeting, and we'll have a committee substitute before the committee at that time. Thanks again for being with us. Let's move on now to Senate Bill 121, Cruise Ship Discharge. Senator Elton you'd like to join us up front, please. Welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please go ahead with your initial presentation. We plan to hold the bill over and act on it expeditiously.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. My name is Kim Elton. I'm Senator representing District B, the city and borough of Juneau. Mr. Chair, I'm not going to work off the sponsor statement or read the sponsor statement, but I do want to make a few points about the bill. First, this bill, SB 121, simply restores the alternate compliance discharge protocols that were codified by the legislature in 2004. And the vehicle there was House Bill 522. The second point is House Bill 522 passed the Senate 20-0 and passed the House 40-0. Third, we're having to do this again because of a simple oversight. Passage of the cruise ship initiative last year inadvertently repealed the provisions of law enacted in House Bill 522. That's not a problem that was instigated by the sponsors of the initiative. I just note that the initiative sponsors submitted the initiative and received the petition books well before House Bill 522 was a twinkle in the legislature's eyes. And so it was just a drafting oversight for House Bill 522. Fourth, the initiative sponsors understand the situation and do not object to SB 121. I think hopefully a letter has been distributed by one of the sponsors, Mr. Joe Goldhoff. And then fifth, and Mr. Chair, I'm looking at you because it may be premature to talk about a committee substitute, but it is the committee substitute that hopefully will be before the committee is simply an attempt to deal with language in the title that is very, very broad. What we wanted to do is we wanted to make sure that everybody understood that this is to replicate House Bill 522, dealing with small cruise ship vessels only. With that, I'm open to any questions that you or the committee might have.
Senator Elton, thanks for being with us, and I believe you're being wise in recommending a tightening of the title for the committee's consideration, and we will have a committee substitute before us at the next hearing. Questions or comments for the sponsor? Senator Bundy?
Thank you. I understand that the people who sponsored the initiative wouldn't object to this change. I guess there's no way we could be assured that everyone who voted for it would go along with it, but I think technically, isn't this not a change to a law passed by an initiative, and we would be then forbidden to change that for 2 years?
It is.
Senator Elton.
Thank you, through the chair, Senator Bundy. It is, but I think this would be considered to be a technical change and not a substantive change to the initiative.
I suspect the lawyers will have that definition.
Unfortunately, I think that's true of a lot of things that we end up doing. They're finally determined by men and women in black robes.
Mm-hmm. Other comments or questions? If not, Senator Elton, if you could stay with us. I understand there's a Mr. Bryce Brockway who would like to testify. Mr. Brockway, welcome to the committee. If you could just state your name and affiliation for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bryce Brockway. I'm Vice President of Operations for Cruise West. We're a small cruise operator. We operate 7 small vessels in Alaska between the months of May through September. Just a little history with Cruise West. We're American-owned and operated. Cruise West started way back in 1946 by the late Chuck West. His son now operates Cruise West. And under the new name, Cruise West. Like I said, we operate 7 vessels and visit many small towns throughout Alaska. And just list a few here. Anchorage and Whittier, Cordova, Kodiak, Dutch Harbor, St. Paul, St. John, Sabunga, Nome, Yakutat, Pelican, Hoonah, and then Sitka, Haines, Skagway, Juneau, Petersburg, Ketchikan, and Metlakatla. For the record, Cruise West does support Senate Bill 121, as it does reinstate House Bill 522. And the last 3 years, we believe, have been successful in in the management process for alternative compliance. With that, I don't have anything further other than questions.
Great. Thank you for your presentation. Are there any questions for the witness? If not, Mr. Brockway, thanks for being here. We appreciate it. Captain Michael Jones, welcome. You could just state your affiliation for the record and go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Captain Michael Jones with Lindblad Expeditions. I'd just like to say that Lindblad Expeditions has operated two small pasture vessels here in southeast Alaska since 1989. We operate 7-day voyages and take in the ports of Juneau, Petersburg, and Sitka. Our company is U.S. owned. The vessels are U.S. built, U.S. flagged, U.S. crewed. I'd just like to say that we support Senate Bill 121 and its intent to reinstate the small vessel compliance program from House Bill 522. Thank you.
Okay. Any comments or questions? If not, Captain, thanks for being with us. As I stated before, we plan to have a committee substitute with some of the technical changes back before us at the next meeting. Are there any other thoughts about the way we would proceed with the work of the committee on this bill? Senator Bundy on that or something else?
Mr. Chairman, I was just was interesting and important to note the support as you've asked on other issues, but is there any known opposition?
Senator Elton, if you want to join us. And while he's coming forward, I should also note that Lynn Kent from DEC is available listen-only basis if needed. Senator Elton?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy. Not that we know of. We did, as our first step, get in touch with the sponsors of the initiative because we wanted to make sure that there wasn't another side to the story that we don't know about. We have been working with DEC. My understanding is DEC may have a couple of tweaks that they may want to do it, and we'll be working with the chair and the chair's staff on whether or not they're appropriate through this. But I feel very confident in saying I can't think of any opposition. This bill was thorough. The language of this bill was thoroughly vetted when we debated House Bill 522, and it went through the committees on both sides of the House.
Thank you.
The legislature.
Okay. Anything further? Thank you, Senator Elton, for bringing the bill before
us. Mr. Chair.
That completes our work for today. Is there any further business or information to come before the committee? Dana, any announcements or any housekeeping? If not, thank you all very much for your attention and help today. We will adjourn the meeting at 2:25 in the afternoon.